Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn. It's a gloomy day here in Atlanta, Georgia, but we have a great show for you. Later in the show, we'll be talking with Mark Donilo, the managing partner with Sales Globe. And also with Mark Castrada. Did I butcher that properly?
You did.
The general manager at Lowe's Atlanta Hotels. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Elliot Miller, the CEO of Georgia Banking Company, and Monroe Thrower III, the director of client relations for Georgia Banking Company Funding. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about Georgia Banking Company and what you guys are out doing there for folks.
Well, we're a local Sandy Springs bank. We started in 2001. We offer community banking services, SBA loans, commercial lending, mortgage lending. Monroe is intimately involved with the mortgage lending side. Mm-hmm. We have a mortgage warehouse business, which provides funding for mortgage lenders, which is actually a national business.
Okay. So how did the bank get started, and how do you guys sort of get into the roles that you're in today?
Well, I was the organizer and original investor, and along the way we raised a few million dollars to be chartered, and we're a state chartered bank. We have fewer than 100 shareholders. We started because of the warehouse business. I'd been in that since the early 90s, mm-hmm. and then we expanded into other things, most notably the community banking side, early after our charter.
All right. Monroe, how'd you get into this?
Well, in 2004, Elliot decided he wanted to get into the retail mortgage business. And my background had been direct to consumer retail lending, which is kind of a nationwide platform for selling mortgages to consumers.
Yeah.
So we started the division in 2004, and Elliot brought me on at that point to help kind of start that division. So that was 2004, and since then I ran the retail division and kind of took it from a startup division of the bank to one of our core businesses at this point.
Wow, that's amazing! Yeah. So what are you guys out there doing for folks in the community?
Well, we make direct loans to the consumer for a mortgage. I mean, that's the major thing for the individual. That business has changed a lot recently because of the changes in the regulatory environment.
Definitely.
But anytime someone needs a mortgage, that's what we do. I need an installment loan for any other purpose, second mortgage for educational purposes, adding on to a house, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So how have you guys seen it really change? I know we had the big financial crisis with the loans and everything. Is there an upswing in the real estate market right now? Or are people buying more houses and taking out more loans?
Well, what we saw really was a major retraction in the industry in kind of 08, 09, which was warranted and justified and needed, I guess is the right way to put it. But recently, over the past maybe, I guess, 2 years, what we've seen is a healthier housing market, but not necessarily a healthier mortgage market.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we see housing on a relative upswing. You see property values kind of going up locally in your neighborhoods, and you see them in certain markets across the country where they're very, very, very healthy. But the mortgage market hasn't necessarily completely recovered.
Really?
So we see a lot of cash buyers. We see a lot of private equity buyers of real estate, which do not utilize typical residential mortgage lending. So although we see a better housing market, it's not necessarily a better mortgage market for overall. But we do see far more people that are buying houses today than were 2 or 3 years ago, and that's encouraging. And so we're excited about that. The problems with residential lending, from our perspective today, still lie with the demand side. The underlying consumer isn't necessarily that much better off than they were two or 3 years ago. Yeah, there's still a relatively tough job market, and a lot of the traditional first-time homebuyer market that we would appeal to, which would be kind of 25 to 35-year-old. Well, one generation ago, they had no student loan debt. Well, today, most college graduates have Yeah, I don't know the numbers offhand, but they have
it's a lot.
That's right. They have a lot of student loan debt, and that debt is a burden, and that debt keeps them from,
especially to your parents when you have to move back in with
that,
them.
That's right. So that student loan debt's preventing housing creation.
Okay,
and so more kids are staying, or kids, but more young professionals live at home, which you probably have experienced. and they're not, or they rent.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with renting. It's healthy for the economy. It's healthy housing. And there's nothing wrong with it. And we encourage it. But we also would like to see more folks, buying houses.
Definitely for a younger person coming out of college, it's got to be hard, especially with the regulations that you mentioned, to even get the proper loan to even purchase a small house, isn't it?
That's right. That's exactly right. But there are products available, and there are pathways for folks to buy houses, even if at any age and any kind of economic demographic.
Walk me sort of through that customer engagement. If I come to you guys and I'm looking to get a loan, how do you guys help me make sure that I can start the American dream? I can get my first house. And walk me through that, because it's a tough process, and it's sure. complex and confusing.
Sure. Well, step one is education, with like everything, and it's exposing you or the consumer or home buyer to do I want to buy a house?
Yeah.
And then how do I buy the house? And then what's my budget need to be to buy the house? And what do I need to do between today and the day I want to buy my house, kind of economically, to make the transaction happen? So that's kind of step one. And our our retail loan officers or mortgage advisors, that their job is to take a consumer from day one and prep them to the day that they're ready to actually buy. The step, as you get more detail into the transaction, then what we do is obviously expose you to all of the various products and options that you have available. And one of the nice things that we do that a lot of folks just can't or don't or choose not to is we basically offer every product that's available in the marketplace, which is great. I mean, we do conventional lending, FHA lending, VA, USDA. We do.
So you can handle any kind of customer that comes in. You guys can do any of it.
You got it. If you're buying your fourth house and you want to buy a $2 million house in Buckhead and you need a unique financing solution for you, we can do it. If you're a first-time home buyer buying in, buying in Macon, and you need a 100% financed USDA loan, which is a niche product, we can handle that as well. Our staff and our loan officers are I'm not going to say they're the best, but they're pretty darn close, and I'm proud to say that. They're well trained. They're experienced. They're professionals. They take the time to sit down with their clients face to face and make sure they get the right financing package for them. And that's, I'm not saying that that's unique, but it certainly is something that we do very, very, very well.
And I can tell that it seems like relationships are really important to your business. This isn't very transactional. This is helping people sort of get stuff they want to achieve their goals in life.
We've got a core value that is all of our business dealings have to be two-sided. And that means that it's got to work for us. It's got to work for our customers as well. And we do not look at anything transactional. This is a lifelong relationship. Your mortgage transaction is a lifelong relationship. Your commercial relationships, whether it's conventional or SBA, those are lifelong relationships. On our warehouse business, it's absolutely a commercial transaction, a commercial relationship, and it is entirely about relationships. We learned that. Elliot learned that certain years ago, and it took me a while because I certainly liked. When I first started working, it was transaction. But after him pounded me for years, I finally got it and realized that it was, hey, it's actually a relationship that matters.
Definitely.
And it really is.
And I mean, you guys help different small businesses and stuff get off the ground too, don't you guys?
Yeah, that's right. That's
correct. SBA loans. Mm-hmm. Can you guys talk a little bit about that and what you guys are doing there for folks? And I mean, that's helping stimulate the economy right there, just starting up small businesses.
Yeah, that's true. The small business has had a very difficult time, and it's beginning to come back. What what we want to see in our customers is a demand for new equipment, for a mm-hmm. new building, for growth in a product line, growth in physical properties, all sorts of things that that small businesses need. Those are things we can provide, and we do that both here in the Atlanta market, and we have a location in Spalding County as well. And usually those loans can either be handled directly with a direct loan from the bank or through the SBA product.
Definitely. And these small businesses, too, you guys also help them navigate these waters and help them get into this because they want to focus on selling their product and they don't really know so much about the lending side or the business side in that aspect.
Well, that's true. Really in any loan product, you have to help the customer through the process because it isn't their business. That is our business.
That's right.
And that's what we do. And we have good relationships. To Monroe's point, when we first started the mortgage product, it was an online only product.
Okay.
And it was nationwide. And I thought that it would be a transaction business. I just didn't see that we would have much of ability to do a relationship. As it has turned out, about 30 to 40% of our business in that segment is referral and or repeat.
Wow, that's huge.
And it is huge. We never expected that, mm-hmm. but it shows you the power of that, of good service in the relationship.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So what sets you guys apart from all the other banks out there trying to do what you guys are doing?
Well, small banks like to say it's service, but everybody has service at some level. That is an absolute necessity
that
you have that. Mm-hmm. We depend pretty heavily on technology. That helps us a lot. It mm-hmm. helps us be places mm-hmm. we couldn't otherwise be. We have, as Monroe said, we have a set of core values that guide us by principle, not necessarily mm-hmm. by rule. Mm-hmm. And that guides us to do business with people the way they like to be dealt with, the way we want to be dealt with. It does have to be a two-way street. Everybody has to gain.
Definitely. So you said you guys deal with online stuff. So that means you guys can take loans and give loans to people outside the state, or how does that work?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that business, it depends on where you're advertising, really, mm-hmm. but that can be done all over the U.S. And it tends to be on the online segment, tends to be in highly developed population centers,
okay.
which you can easily identify,
right.
And that's
right.
where we do business.
So
can I add something?
Yeah, definitely.
What makes us different, by the way, just because this is everything Elliot said is absolutely correct, and he's nailed it. But the one thing I would add is that. Most of our peers in the community banking sector are, you know, they dabble in residential mortgage. You know, they do
mm-hmm.
one occasionally.
Yeah.
They do one as a accommodation to a customer, which goes back to Elliot's point about service. They value service in that relationship
yeah.
with their customers. That's not us.
Mm-hmm.
Mortgage is our business.
Yeah.
You're
the best.
That's right. From the board level to senior management to mid management to our line employees, we all
breathe.
You got it. Mortgage is what we do. And so whether you're a consumer buying a house or refinancing a house, or whether you're a business that is, because many of our clients on the commercial side or on the warehouse side are in fact mortgage lenders.
Okay.
They like to work with us because they know we know what we're talking about when it comes to mortgage. And most bankers don't. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense
yeah.
right there. You guys focus on something you want to be the best at.
That's right. That's right. That's our niche. That's what we're best at. Right.
So how are you guys, because you only have, do you have one brick and mortar, or you guys have only one here in the Sandy Springs area?
We have only one location in Sandy Springs. We have one in Spalding County. We also have some origination capability in Charlotte and other parts of North
but
Carolina.
You guys are doing business all over the United States. How are you guys getting the word out and getting in front of those people? How do they know about you? Is it just word of mouth you do such good business, or how do you do that?
Delta goes everywhere.
I love everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of jet fuel and shoe leather involved in that process.
You have people hitting the pavement.
Yeah. We do advertise, yeah. but there's a there's a limit to what the advertising can do for you. You have to have people out on the street.
Well, like you said, everyone's saying the same things and using the same buzzwords when they're talking about this business, but it's really about, hey, these are the results that I've proven I can do, and these the results we've had.
That's right.
Do you guys have any stories maybe about success stories about people that you've either helped get a house or small businesses that you've helped them acquire a loan? Do you have any of those?
Yeah. I'll tell a quick story. And this was a story that when I was recruiting a guy that ended up being one of our top producers and top salespeople, and he's a wonderful guy. I didn't know that he was a wonderful guy at the time, but I came to find out he was. You know, we were telling this guy how wonderful we were for 12 months, and finally he said, "Okay, I'll come work for you guys. Let's do it." And at the time I was running the retail division, and he gets a tricky deal in, and it's a relocation loan where a guy's moving from, I think, Chicago to Charlotte, and it's a roughly $1 million loan, so it's a big loan. And the long story short was the guy tried to go through the company his realtor referred him to through the relocation organization. And they couldn't get the deal done.
Wow.
And so our employee, who I'd been with us for maybe 60 days, tries to go through his manager and say, "Hey, we need to get this done. Is there any way I can help?" And his manager gets me involved, and I said, "It's a no brainer. This is a guy's got great credit. He's got it's a big loan. He works for a key company in this market. Yeah. Let's make it happen." And so then I worked with John, the loan officer, the guy I was talking about, and we got a package set up for the borrower. We got him closed in 2 weeks, and it was relatively painless for the borrower, for the agents, for the loan officer, and the loan officer, like I said, this guy became our top producer. At the end of that deal, looked at me and said, "I've never worked in an organization like this."
Yeah.
Where top management gets involved and makes something happen this fast. He said, "This is absolutely the place I want to be." This is fantastic.
Well, people don't want to be stressing out about that either. They want to get a professional, have them deal with it so they can focus on what they're good at, because it's just a really stressful process.
That's right.
Wow.
And this guy tells his story. Every time I see him, he's like, "God, the reason I'm here is because you stepped in and made this happen, and I'll never forget that." And I'm like, I didn't do anything. I just wanted to make sure the customer got the right deal, and
definitely
make sure everybody's.
I'm just doing my job. That's what I do every day with everybody.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, Elliot, you just have to be beaming with pride. If you have a bunch of employees just like Monroe over here, it must make your job really easy.
It does. It makes it very easy. We hire the best quality people we can. We train them the best we can and give them the running room to do their jobs.
Empower them is key. Yeah.
Well, what advice would you guys give anyone that's maybe looking out to get a loan? What advice would you give them if they came to you?
First advice I would give them, if they're looking to buy a house, and that maybe they, a lot of folks think they can't. That's the thing. It's engage us early. It's give us a call. Make us one of the first calls you make. Talk to our staff and find out all of the various solutions that you actually have available, because the odds are, for most folks, there is a product, in fact, that's available that will help them get into a house. They just don't know it, and they're maybe intimidated by the process, or they hear so much bad press in the media about what the mortgage market and the banking sectors have gone through over the past 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So the easiest advice is call us early. We'll figure out the right solution. Yeah, that's right. We'll educate you. We'll walk you through the process. We'll walk you through what all of your various options are, and we'll find the right solution for you. And we do that every time. And if there's not something, then we'll put you on the path to how to get there.
Definitely. Well, you mentioned misconceptions. What's the biggest misconception when it comes to mortgages out there?
To me, the biggest misconception is that you have to have a 20% down payment in order to buy a house.
Okay, so
that's just not true.
That's just one of those those urban legends.
That's right. There are, and God, this is going to take me back 10 years, but I'll put the hat on. There are, you can put as little as zero down in some markets. You can put 3.5% down on any FHA product, which is available almost anywhere. And even with traditional conventional
financing. Even I can afford that.
Yeah. So. See? You know, with traditional conventional financing, it's as little as 5%. So it's, you know, are the days of everybody gets 100% financing if they want it gone? Yeah. Yeah. But there are lots of different products with very little down payments that most folks can qualify for.
All right. Well, how do our list? Oh,
the advice for the commercial borrower or someone who wants to be a commercial borrower is pretty much the same. Get to know a banker very well. Know them early, so you learn quickly what's going to be required, because you don't naturally know that.
Yeah.
So you need guidance, and that helps you in determining what you want to do, what you can do, and then when the time comes to actually buy a business or whatever your objective is, you've got somebody in your corner already understands you or understands the business, then things can happen more quickly.
Wow. So how can we help you guys out here at Business Radio X? Do you need more people buying houses? Do you need more businesses that need to get loans, or
yes,
all the above?
Build customer relationships and it all
on and talk to them and get those stories there for you guys.
Sure.
So how do our listeners reach out if they want to have that conversation and just become educated in all this different stuff with you guys?
Well, they can call me anytime at 770-373-2357. That's a direct dial. I'm always available, and I can direct them to the appropriate area if they need to do that. We also have a couple of websites. Can I plug those?
All of them.
geobanking.com is our main site. That's geobanking.com. We also have our retail site, which is nmaloans.com. So those are the two easiest ways to get us, in that phone number. So.
And we have a main line, which is 770-226-8800.
Wow, people can actually call you, so.
They do. And we actually answered the phone.
it's not one of those automated systems.
And I guess if we had to say it, if they want to drive over and see us, we're right here in Sandy Springs.
Definitely.
We're at Powers Ferry Landing, and we're you know, right across from where the new Hertz Ferry Elementary is going to be, if you know where that is.
Well, give the address so they can Google it.
6190 Powers Ferry Road.
Perfect. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for being on today and teaching me about stuff.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Mark Donilo, Managing Partner with Sales Globe. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about Sales Globe and what you guys are doing there for folks.
Well, at Sales Globe, we focus on three major things within sales effectiveness. We do work with large companies around sales strategy. So what's their direction? What customers are they going to focus on? And how do they design their sales organizations? We do work around sales training and team development. We also do work around sales incentives or compensation. So all the way from the strategy to how you motivate people to how you help them think differently or innovate or be creative.
Well, how's the sales space really changed in the last 10 years? Because it's really been developing and there's all these new technologies coming in and people have to know stuff.
Well, you're right. The technologies, we kind of look at them as enablers. And I think what they do is they push the process further. But I think what we're seeing competitively, as the other gentleman we're talking about, is that we're having to get better at providing solutions and actually getting closer to the customer. So it's no longer an environment where we're going through transactions, but we're actually building relationships. We're having to be creative. We're having to be innovative with solutions to differentiate ourselves from competitors.
Well, so tell me a little bit about this book that you wrote, The Innovative Sale.
Yeah, so this is a kind of a labor of love. This is my second book. The first book we wrote was about sales incentives and motivating the sales organization. But I'm what you might call an art school MBA, meaning I went to art school undergrad.
And me too.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Common heritage. So I was a designer in New York for a number of years. And I, like most people there, you find roommates, and the roommates I had at the time were stockbrokers. And I was working for a design firm. I worked for a museum and exhibition design firm first, and then I worked for Saatchi & Saatchi afterward. But my roommate friends, the stockbrokers, they, after about 3 years, were all going off to business school.
Yeah.
So I got in a truck and helped them move down to various business schools. And I took a look and I said, you know, I kind of like this. This is really interesting. I'd like to learn more about the business side, maybe how that matches up to the design side. So every year, some of the top business schools will take what they call a certain number of dance students. And what they mean by that is they're not proper dancers, but they're people that are from the arts. So I was one of those dance students, and I came into business school and loved it and really enjoyed it. As I was doing the job interviews, what I learned very abruptly, though, was no serious business, no serious company was going to hire the art guy because they couldn't quite figure out how that fit.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had to take that whole design background and kind of put that in the back or put that in the closet for a while, and went into consulting and was working at that for a few years, and realized that a lot of the work that we were doing for our clients was a little bit different than other teams. We were doing a lot of work around helping them think of solutions, and we were actually bringing in the creative processes that we had used in design before. So to bring that around, I started to ask the question of how can we actually teach sales organizations or sales leaders to think creatively? And it really was prompted by something that happens to me pretty much every week, which is phone calls that I get from companies where it might be a sales leader and they'll ask a question. And the question might be something like, how do companies in our space structure their sales process around major accounts? And so we'll give them the answer. We'll make a few calls, give them some benchmarks. But they don't want to know how do companies in our space structure the sales process around major accounts. What they want to know is, what should I do? And so what they tend to do is they replicate. They start to look for benchmarks and comparables, and they replicate. So the question of why is, why do we tend to replicate? Why do we tend to create the same solutions over and over and over rather than thinking of something new? So that's what really prompted the book, and the thinking was, it's kind of a left brainer's approach to right brain thinking. So if I'm not a naturally creative person, how can I be more innovative with how I work with customers, with how I develop strategies?
Wow. Well, let's dig into that a little bit. How do people do that? Because if you are a very analytical thinker, being innovative can be a little scary. You might not understand the creative element.
Right, exactly. And I think that's one of the misperceptions and one of the myths around it, is that something like creativity is natural. And it can only be natural. And we see people that are innovative in organizations, and they tend to do it intuitively in a lot of cases. But it actually can be a learned process. And if you think about the reason for the existence of design schools, art schools, architecture schools, it's because we teach people how to do those things. So I looked back, and I indeed had done it intuitively over the years as well. But I looked back and I asked myself the question, is there actually a process? Are there principles that you could follow to do this? And the answer is yes. And it can go together in many different ways. But what we did is we pulled together a process as we talked to people in the creative field. So we talked to people in architecture, design, the music fields. We talked to people that are leaders in major sales organizations that are creative. And we asked them, how do you do this? Mm-hmm. And so we put together an approach. And so the idea is the approach is something that a sales leader can take either in full, or they could take parts of it and they can apply it to their business.
Well, it sounds like you guys need to go talk to our education systems, and they need to marry the business side with the creative and teach the creatives a little bit about business, and they need to teach business people a little bit about the creative side.
Right. A little bit of immersion is not a bad thing for learning how the other side.
Well, I mean, if you
it.
See some of the biggest companies out there, like look at Apple, for example, right. They've married the two. They're 50-50, innovative and creative and business.
But they have battled for years along the way to do that.
Oh, yeah.
When you think about it initially, Apple got into the education market. They found their niche, and it took them, you know, decades to be able to move beyond that and move beyond the installed base of all the traditional DOS computers and Windows computers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one of the principles that we talk about around innovation is tenacity, and you have to continue to push that. But indeed they did, and they had a leader who was relentless.
A little crazy, but
it worked. Yeah, and most businesses will not push that far in order to do that unless there's a clear reward for doing it.
Definitely. Well, in this space, we have the startup space now, and it seems like a lot of people, especially in the Atlanta area, are trying to do that because with the technology advances and what people can do with apps and different kinds of web infrastructure, they're really trying to take this and push the space a lot. Is that what you're seeing?
I think what you'll tend to see is the innovation happens, I think, naturally in the smaller companies, the startups, the mid-cap companies. Of course, there are always exceptions. You've got your Apple computers, you've got your Pixars. Obviously, that's related to Apple. But I think the large companies tend to follow the status quo because that's safe. They're in protection mode.
Mm-hmm.
All of their CEOs will talk about innovation, but we look at it at the level of, you know, really three levels. You can talk about it at a leadership level. You can measure and reward innovation, which a lot of companies are starting to do, and you can also demonstrate practices of innovation. So how do you actually do innovation? But we tend to see it in those smaller companies and mid-caps because I think it's a necessity. It's how they get going. It's how they survive. They have to do it.
Okay, so it's an evolution process. So what are the kind of companies you guys deal with and you guys are helping them out with these problems?
Well, gosh, in terms of I think companies that are pushing on innovation, one of them that comes to mind is a company like Aramark in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I think they're a great example. They have the characteristics of a business where what they do has to be innovative because they do a lot of custom programs and installations for customers. So they're not a transactional business. So it requires them to sit back and it requires them to think about how they're going to approach it. A local company called PGI, Premier Global Services, that you may know of, also great innovators. They do conferencing and video presence products, but they have to be creative because they're not one of the biggest in their space, right? So they're one of those companies that has to do something to try to get an advantage.
Those are the kind of companies you guys work with and help them.
Well, in our business overall, we tend to work with Fortune 1000 companies. So we'll work with companies like IBM and Comcast and very large companies as well. They are not always the most innovative, but that's not their thing, right? So
I think that's why you're solving their problem, though, because they've built up a huge infrastructure and now they need to push the limits. And like you said, the smaller companies, they have to do that. But the bigger companies, once you're the big dog, you don't think about that anymore. So bringing someone in to teach an innovative sales process, I would feel like it would be a great advantage for them.
Right. And I think the questions that come up in those kind of companies is how do we start to build a culture of innovation, in particular in our sales organization? Because when we ask sales leaders, we ask companies, where does innovation happen? It tends to be in product design. It tends to be somewhere in marketing. They say, you know, it's a really a name for or a pseudonym for product rationalization. So it doesn't often migrate into the sales organization, although it's critical for sales success. So it hasn't really become, I think, formalized in terms of how do we change the sales culture into a culture of innovation.
Well, explain how it is changing and how you guys are sort of just changing it for people.
Well, I think the first step is understanding the importance of it. When we ask sales leaders and we do surveys and interviews on topics like this, when we ask sales leaders how important is creativity or how important is innovation in the sales process, they will say, 80% plus will say it's one of the most important things that we can do. And they'll cite examples of their top salespeople, most of them being creative or innovative people. We ask them, well, how do they do that? There's not a clear answer. There's not, well, you know, they do X, Y, and Z. So I think first step is understanding the importance of it. Second step is how do you start to build that culture? And that's where we bring some of these processes in. So some of the key points that will come out that we'll work with companies on is, first of all, take something basic like when you have a customer problem. Don't take that problem at face value. If I start with a customer problem and a customer says, hey, we want to cut cost on your product, the first thing we're going to work on, if we're like every other company, is how do we lower cost?
Yeah.
If we can take that problem and we can break it into components and redefine it and come up with a better problem statement, then we start from a differentiated starting point.
Okay.
So we can actually begin in a different place than our competitors begin in. So we'll talk about very straightforward methods for how do I break that apart. And so with redefining the customer problem, we might be looking at how do I immerse myself or place myself in the customer's mind frame. So very often we go in to work with a customer. Mm-hmm. I'm coming in, I'm going to talk with you about things that I think are important and things that I'm trying to offer to you, when in fact I really should probably put myself in your shoes and try to immerse myself in your life and what you're dealing with in your job.
Definitely.
You may only have 15 minutes to talk with me. You may be ready to cancel the appointment before I walk in the door.
I have a soccer practice to go to.
10 other things going on related to your business, but I'm thinking about that one problem I'm trying to solve for you. So first of all, immersion in the customer's point of view. And then second is, how do you tear the problem apart and look at it in a few different pieces? So we could take any problem statement. We can break it very simply into financially, What are they trying to accomplish and why? From a market or a user standpoint, what are they trying to accomplish and why? From a product or application standpoint, what are they trying to accomplish and why? And then finally, from a resource standpoint, in terms of getting it done, what are they trying to accomplish and why? So asking the what, and the why that we can then redefine. So just one simple step like that can start us in a different place in terms of thinking differently. And we've got a number of steps like that in the process.
Well, that's huge right there. And I think you brought up a really good point that resonated with me, that if the salesperson comes back to the company and says, hey guys, everyone says this product is too expensive. If it was $10 cheaper, we'd have 1,000 more sales. That's a huge thing right there if people would listen to the end product.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. So what's your world domination plan for 2014? What are you guys out there doing?
You know, we're spreading the word. So a lot of what we're doing is getting out, talking to companies about the importance of sales innovation. And we're doing very simple things like workshops, sales innovation workshops, where we come in for a day and we work with them through examples from their own business of how to go through some of these key steps. And what we're trying to do is get them to start to use this, because a lot of this is counterintuitive. When I look at some of the training we're doing in this area, you know, it's not like fill out the sales pipeline or the sales funnel and kind of enter this information in here and is your customer in trouble mode or whatever it is. It's not quite as simple as that. This is more like creative writing class.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for people, especially people that are left brain thinkers, to get into the mode of I'm going to start pushing my thinking differently. So we're giving them methods. And then what we're doing is we're encouraging them to start trying some of these ideas. And we use this analogy of a golf swing. And we say, you know, you don't want to load a boxcar of innovation into your business. What you want to do is try a few things and make it a natural part of your process. And so the golf swing analogy is something like this. You know, I've been taking golf lessons and playing golf for, you know, 30 plus years. I won't go any higher than that, but 30 plus years, and I'm still no good. But there are so many things you can learn about golf. There's so many mechanics to the swing.
Yeah.
There's the stance, there's the grip, there's keeping your head down, there's the rotation of your hips, et cetera. But when you get up on the first tee and you go to hit the ball, other than don't screw it up, you know, what do you have on your mind? You have on your mind probably two things, which is I'm going to keep my head down and I'm going to get a long extension in the back.
Yeah.
Or maybe follow through. So the idea is we want to start to build some of this into our creative muscle memory so that I'm working through problems. I'm starting to naturally think of some of these things. And as you do that, you can start to build that. And as you build that, then you can start to do that within teams in your organization, and you can eventually move that into the culture of how you sell. So it's kind of step by step. But that's our domination plan, is just kind of going out and spreading the word. How this works and getting out in sessions like this to be able to talk about it.
Well, it's got to be a good product, but salespeople can be really hard-headed, and to change their mind about things is difficult. So you guys, that's what you guys are doing.
Well, that's true. But I will tell you, if it's going to give them an advantage, if it's going to give them the ability to do something differently and be more successful, they'll listen.
Well, it obviously is. So, yeah. So how do our listeners reach out if they want to learn more, if they want to buy the books?
Well, you can get the book very easily. Just go to Amazon.com. And you'll find the Innovative Sale there, or you can go to bn.com, or it's also in Barnes & Noble stores. If you want to learn a bit more as well, you can go to salesglobe.com, and the book's on there along with our other book and some more information on just being creative about your sales process.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Well, last but definitely not least, we have Mark Castriota. Did I get it right that time?
Perfect.
There we go. Only took me two times. The general manager at Lowe's Atlanta Hotel. Welcome to the show. You've been sitting there patiently. You're laughing at all my bad jokes, taking notes. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, these guys were great. So learned a lot this morning.
So tell me a little bit about what you guys are doing over there at Lowe's.
Okay. So, you know, Lowe's Atlanta Hotel was built 4 years ago, right in the heart of Midtown. We're 414 rooms, 44 suites with 40,000 square feet of meeting space. We like to think of ourselves as a 4.5-star hotel.
I like that right there.
Yeah. So we're definitely in the luxury market, and we have had tremendous success being not only in the market, but right in the center of Midtown, which is a fabulous place to be right now. It's a vibrant community. It's probably the most exciting part of Atlanta right now, with the walkability, the building that's going on, the young professionals that are there, the restaurants, the High Museum. I mean, you just go on and on and on. It's a Piedmont Park. It's a great place to be.
It's a great place, and it's growing really fast.
Fantastic.
And we're loving that. But how long have you guys been around?
We've been 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 years.
All right. And what have you seen sort of in that 4 years in the Atlanta industry?
Yeah, I've been in the market for 14 years, and we We basically, in the hotel industry, follow the economy. Mm-hmm. So when the economy is doing well, the hotel business does well. And in the 4 years that we've been in operation, our revenues have increased each year, which is
That's huge, especially in the industry. Pretty phenomenal.
Again, we follow the economy. So right now, there is a tremendous amount of demand for business. We do well. Certainly, our niche is group business.
Okay.
With the 40,000 square feet of meeting space that we have.
All right.
But we do a lot of transient business as well. So our mix is about 60-40. But we have seen pace. So pace is what we have on the books that's contracted. So for 14, we're probably in the neighborhood of about 7,000 room nights ahead of where we were same time last year.
Wow.
Which is a phenomenal place to be.
Yeah.
So we're ahead of budget.
Definitely.
And budget always increases over last year.
So you mentioned group business. So you guys do a lot of events there at the hotel?
We do. We can do anything from local events, but primarily our business is somebody comes in, they have a 2 or 3 day program, 250 room nights with meal functions, and they need a ballroom, they need breakout space. So we're able to do all of that.
So if they want to do like a mini kind of trade show, if they want to do a training thing for their people, or they just want to have a fun sort of an event, you guys can do it all.
We can do all that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So let's talk about service, because that's one of the most important things at a hotel, and it's really from the bottom up, the service has to be great. Mm-hmm. How do you guys make sure – how are you hiring different people to make sure that happens?
We have we have a pretty exhaustive search and process to hire people. Sometimes that's not a good thing, but we hire the right people.
Yeah.
I do believe that there are people that are naturally and inherently made for the service industry.
Yeah.
And then there are those that are not, which is okay. but we hire the right people, then we train them, then we give them orientation, then we have star servers in every single department. Then we reinforce positives. We role model behavior from a management perspective. We do evaluations on our staff. We're fortunate that we've got a team, of, you know, employees and managers. So team members and leaders that take pride in providing exceptional services.
Yeah.
So it's all about the people. Everybody has a hotel room.
Wow, you know, really?
Everybody has meeting space. Everybody has all the room and the bed and all that. It's really the people. And so you have to hire the people, right? You have to train them. You have to orient them. And then you have to reinforce positives and keep that going. So we're fortunate. We're number 5 in the market in TripAdvisor.
Wow.
Of 197 hotels. And the only hotels that are above us are select service hotels by the airport, surprisingly.
All right, yeah.
So in our competitive set of group hotels in the city, we're the best. And what's really important about that is that's somebody that is, we're not soliciting any of those comments. They've stayed in our hotel, then they go back and they go on TripAdvisor and they say, I've had this fantastic experience here at the Loews Atlanta Hotel, and here's why. And so one of the keys to that as well is I have one person on my staff that responds and monitors all of our social media feedback.
Wow.
So he's a manager, and so he responds to every single TripAdvisor review that we get, positive or negative, and every other social media site or that we use, whether it's Google or booking.com or Yelp or wherever we see reviews. Mm-hmm. And then we take those and we share those reviews with our team and say, hey, if you were mentioned, then you get what we call mark money. So mark money is a little green bill that we make up, and it's a once you get so much mark money, they can take that and they can trade it in for days off or MARTA cards or
I've never
whatever.
Heard of that. That's a great system you guys built in there.
Yeah, it started with the general manager that opened the hotel and has now become vice president for us. They were Dale Dollars.
Okay. So all right. I was about to Dale. Ask that if you had to just hire people the name Mark because.
Yeah. So now we converted and now it's Mark Money.
So if you get that position right there, you get to name the currency.
You can name the currency. That's right.
Well, it sounds like you guys have a great culture there just from the management all the way down. And I think that's really important because people actually take pride, it sounds like, in the hotel itself. And, and it's hard to find people in the service industry that do that.
I don't find that. I think that people that are in this industry love being in this industry. I've been in the industry for 34 years. I wake up every morning not being able to wait to get to work. I'm excited to go to work every single day and interact with guests, interact with team members, face and achieve different, you have obstacles and challenges every day, but you know, whether it's sales or whether it's new customers or whatever that is, but it's exciting and it's different every single day. But so I don't think it's hard to find them. I think you have to hire the right people, but typically when you hire people, they tend to stay in the industry.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier about you guys have, and I've never heard about this for a hotel. You guys have one person in house that deals with all your social media.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems really forward-thinking to me, and you don't think about that. In other businesses, PR, they have PR departments that have social media, but you don't think about that in the hotel industry. Yeah. So are there a lot of people doing that, or is that just you guys?
I don't know of anybody else that does it, frankly. What traditionally the feedback that you would receive, whatever hotel brand you have, you send out surveys, or they can go online and they can fill out a survey if you stay in the hotel. And that's typically the only way you get feedback.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting story. My administrative assistant at another location, we were having a conversation, and I said, you know, what are you and Michael, her partner, doing this weekend? And she said, well, I don't know. I'm just going to go on TripAdvisor and look to see what the highest rated restaurants are in East Atlanta or in Midtown.
That's what people do.
And I said, wow, I don't do that. And I said, well, that's really pretty cool. So I think what has happened is with all of these sites, that's how people search now.
Yeah.
They still search through the newspaper, and they still search through Wear magazine and Atlanta Now and those, but they also, and maybe even more so, especially with younger people, the young professionals, they're searching through
TripAdvisor, 30 seconds on my phone
or whatever. And we also find is if we respond on those sites or we're active on those sites, you get people that come into the hotel and whether they're meeting planners or individual guests and say, I saw that you responded to every single survey.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I know that you're monitoring this and you're paying attention to the feedback that you're getting.
Yeah.
So, wow, I think I'm going to stay here. If I live in Chicago and I'm coming to Atlanta for the weekend and I've searched Midtown Atlanta hotels and saw – you know, TripAdvisor rating of your hotel, and then I read some of the reviews, and then I see that you're actually responding to them.
Well, and it's huge too, because you got to bring up a good point that it's really hard to get someone to write positive feedback about anything on the internet, even if it only takes 5 seconds. Now, if I have a negative experience, I'm going to take the time, it's really easy to get a negative review, especially in the hotel industry. So it says just so much about you guys that you guys have people that see that you guys are in there, you care about your social presence, and they want to go out there and reward you for it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you guys just wrapped up the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival. Mm-hmm. You guys have been hosting that for a while, right?
For the 4 years that it's been in existence.
So how does that work, a hotel hosting a festival?
Well, there's two partners that started the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, and they approached us and wanted to be in partnership with us as a host hotel. Because it's the location is centered in Midtown, it's a perfect fit for us. So if you've gone to this festival in other cities, I recently attended the one in Charleston, South Carolina, and that happens to be in Marion Square. So it's really just an outdoor event, which is okay. It's just different in different cities. Here, the partnership with us works very, very well because there's a lot of chefs that come into the city, and they do demonstrations in the hotel itself.
Really?
So you've got the tasting tents that are located in Midtown, and those are always fun to go to. You've got people coming and they're giving you as much as you care to drink and as much as you care to eat, and they're focused on talking about their restaurants or their product, whatever beverage product they have. But you also have the component of learning and cooking demonstrations. And we had cooking demonstrations on our patio. We had cooking demonstrations. We actually convert one of our spaces that's called the Overlook, which has floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking Midtown. And we built an entire kitchen, or the food and wine staff built an entire kitchen. So separate from our kitchen. So it's a display kitchen where chefs are actually cooking, and
you can see what they're doing.
You can see what they're doing, just like if you were to watch it on a TV show. And then they're hosting dinners of 60 and 80 people for those functions. So we're very, very proud to be associated with the Food and Wine Festival. It's a great opportunity for us to get our name out, because we are a smaller hotel brand. We're not one of the large brands. There's only 22 hotels.
Wow.
In great cities and great hotels. But we have to work a little harder sometimes.
Well, it seems like you guys have really integrated yourself into the community really well. And it sounds like, even being the smaller one, we talked about this earlier in the show, that you guys have to be more innovative and really just push the bar. And it seems like you guys are being really forward thinking about the way you're doing stuff with social media, with different events. You guys also have a suite called the Celestial Dream Suite. Can you talk about that a little bit? It sounds very interesting to me.
We do. So in this suite, there's a massage chair that, like if you went to get a manicure or a pedicure and you have one of those chairs that, you know, the rollers are in it, and attached to that is an iPod with some different music.
Some Enya or something.
Yeah. The intent of this suite is to have something that's unique and different. Again, everybody has a suite, or everybody has hotel rooms. Yeah. But when you come in, so you've got that chair, and that's in the suite or the outer section. Then if you go into the bedroom, there's some technology that actually feels like the bed has a vibration, and it's not that kind of vibration. It's a much milder sensation. But then there is music component to that, and then there's an aromatherapy piece to that too. And what's also unique is once you close the door, the ceiling of the room has been painted and it looks like a night sky. So you get all these like soothing sensory experiences in the dream suite. And so it's something that's different that I don't believe any other hotel has this. So it's just when you check in and you've had a long, or you want to come for a weekend and you want to have an experience that's different from just staying in your hotel room, you can book the Dream Suite.
Sounds like a get out of jail free card for me and my fiance if I ever upset her. Just book her a night in the room.
Absolutely.
So you guys also just partnered up with two other Lowe's hotels. Is it the one in Nashville and New Orleans?
New Orleans,
okay.
Right.
Okay. So what are you guys doing with them? What does that partnership entail?
Yeah. One of the things that we wanted to do in partnership was work with and have some packages that were attractive and really promoted the South.
Okay.
So you've got, you know, a great city in New Orleans, and you've got a great city in Nashville, and of course us. So we created these packages that all are centered on, if you come to Atlanta, you're going to get tickets to the Coca-Cola Museum. You're going to get an amenity that is intrinsic or that reflects the South or the Atlanta. It could be the chef may create something with pecans when they're in season, or the chef may create something with peaches. You get a cocktail in the bar that is peach based. you've got some, so you get this experience that is local and different for each of the cities. Again, for Lowe's, we want to be able to promote something that's different. We're also very excited that Brand USA, who really works to attract international travelers to the, mm-hmm. to the United States. So we've gone into partnership with them, and they're actually promoting this Rhythms of the South package, when they promote, okay. The United States. But it's just a way to us to continue to say, hey, there's very cool locations. And if you go, you're going to get something that's just indigenous to those separate individual markets. So it's a way to combine and, utilize the cost of doing something with that and split it in three different parts.
I love that right there. That's huge.
That's cool.
So, what are the rest of your plans for 2014? You guys have any big events coming up? Do you have any businesses coming in, hosting any conferences or anything?
We host a lot of conferences. We'll do more than 70,000 group room nights this year. Wow. There's not one specific thing that's different for the second half of the year. Mostly it's just individual groups calling us and saying, hey, we'd like to host a group, and Bank of America comes in next week. And I did a site for True Blue, yesterday, which is an opportunity that we're looking at, that would have 350 rooms for four nights with food and beverage each day. So nothing specific or different than business as normal for us.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Well, tell our listeners how they can reach out, learn more, and book nights with you guys.
It's easy to Google us. You can just look at Lowe's Atlanta Hotel, and we come right up on the first page. We also have our own website. We're right at 1065 Peachtree, and right in the heart of Midtown, in the 1075 building. Very easy to find. So
stop in, check it out, look at all the cool stuff you have.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for
coming
on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thanks to all our guests today. This is Kevin Finn for our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.